Next on BYUSN, Cougar football comes up just short against Arizona State. They drop a second consecutive game. What went wrong? And what did you think of the end of game chaos?
I can see you in that shop.
After the loss, BYU's Big 12 championship game hopes are not done yet. We'll discuss what exactly needs to happen and if we think it's likely the Cougars go to Dallas.
It's just another Madich Monday. As ESPN's Trevor Madich breaks down what the loss means for the Cougars, how they get right in hopes of a Big 12 title game appearance. And BYU sweeps the men and women's cross country national championships on Saturday. Eight runners are in studio with trophies in hand to recap the incredible run, pun intended, in Wisconsin.
Break out the brooms for the build. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy November 25th. It is not your typical Monday. It's going to be an emotional Monday on the show, that is for sure. I'm Spencer Linton, alongside a man who is fine with lack of crowd control as long as he gets to choose when and where it happens, Jerem Jordan.
Last night at the Smith Fieldhouse, the cross-country teams got back, and there was a party there. I did not go to this one. If I'd known about it, I probably would have gone. They're coming off the bus, celebrating the national championship trophies, multiple, coming off the bus. My neighbor and homie, Ryan Waite, bringing out the broom, and then he's crowd surfing. Ed Eystone, Diljit Taylor, they got music blaring. This is Shane Reese and Tom Holman. That's Ryan Waite, men's assistant coach, crowd surfing, starting the BYU chant. That's the kind of lack of crowd control we were excited about, as opposed to what happened in Tempe.
Oh, boy.
Which you'll get into.
The weekend
in a moment
was one for the books. That is
crowd,
for
the
sure.
Crowd control in the Marriott Center was just fine for the two basketball games where I was.
Love to see those teams celebrated as they should have been. Wild mix of emotions over the weekend.
I know.
Because of how things played out.
I typically sort of suppress certain emotions until the show, and then they kind of come out. Right now I'm pretty apathetic. I promise you I'll be angry by the end. Not about winning national championships, yes, though. That's the great news. Congratulations.
Bring on angry Jerem. Rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
Levitt over the middle, complete for a first down, and he's into the end zone for the second time already. Throws high, caught, Lassiter, wide open, JoJo, touchdown, drop down.
There was a second left. BYU will get one play, and the game is over.
Oh, it's a rivalry now, folks. Full on. BYU and Arizona State, mark it down. This is one of those organic moments. It is a rivalry now.
The new St. Mary's, but in the Big
12. 1,000,000%. I was actually going to present that on the show, so it's there. It is there for BYU football, who fall just short in Tempe and lose a second straight game. Now 9-2, still tied atop the Big 12 standings for first, but it's a four-way tie. Holy cow. Jerem. Let's just begin with the actual game. Why do you feel like BYU...
Oh, we're going to talk about the game. Cool.
Yes. Why do you feel like BYU lost the game on Saturday?
First half was atrocious. BYU's down 21-0. They get a field goal late. The game was really lost in that moment. If it's a close game, I feel good about how BYU has a chance in the second half, right? Certainly woke up in the second half, outscoring Arizona State 20-7. You have a possession in the final minutes like you did against Kansas to perhaps win this game. The onside kick was brutal as a part of that first half. So that's two random kicks, Spencer, that have if you boil it down to those, which you kind of can't, but if you did, you could say two random kicks cost BYU at the end of this season. The tale of two halves is very different. The yards per play better, yards per rush, look at that. Minus one in margin doesn't help. But ultimately in the fourth quarter, BYU gets, albeit in a weird situation, two red zone stops, which reminds you of SMU a little bit, although Arizona State didn't handle kind of on the field and off the field very well with this. But don't go down 21-0, man. If you don't do that, you've got a decent shot in this game. But unfortunately, Cam Scataboo got going and felt like BYU wasn't meeting him in the hole. They were kind of waiting for him to come to them at some points. There were some injuries to Crew Wakely and Harrison Taggart, which did not help either. BYU goes for it on 4th and 5 at midfield on the first drive. I thought that was a little too aggressive for my taste. I would have preferred to pin Arizona State back and see what the BYU defense, which was number one in the league, coming in, see what they can do. But ultimately, you've got to score points in this league, Spence. BYU scored between 34 and 41 points in their first five wins in Big 12 play. Since then, 22 against Utah, 13 against Kansas, now 23 against Arizona State. That was not enough to win.
For a second straight week, BYU only gives up 7 points in the second half and lose. Like, that is a wild stat.
You want halftime adjustments and all this? It's happening.
They had them.
It's happening.
Just really, really lackluster first halves in the Kansas game and the Arizona State game. Momentum is a funny thing. And when BYU opted to go on their opening drive from midfield on 4th and 5 and didn't get it, I mean, it was palpable. You could just feel the momentum shift to Arizona State's sideline. You get a big 4th down stop. You're in front of your home fans. And now you only have to go 50 yards to score that opening touchdown. And it just kind of was like BYU was working uphill from that point on. And then the onside kick also brought in a new element.
So random. Although I do love the idea of just blasting it at the other team. And if it goes past him, it's a squib. But unfortunately, Talon Alfrey was right in the way.
Like, this has nothing to do with BYU having a lack of heart. Like, that onside kick play.
It's random.
It's a fortuitous bounce, and it's a gutsy – really good call by Kenny Dillingham.
I think it's a better way to do an onside than the traditional way.
Especially if you want to catch him off guard.
Yes.
So
that's a bummer.
There were just a number of things. Like, that momentum train was just – Arizona State was – they were on the track and headed downhill. And you wondered, how is BYU going to stop this thing? Because it didn't feel like BYU was going to be able to stop it. And there was a good deal of the fan base based on social media commentary at halftime that had given up. We're like, hey, pack it up. I had a bunch of people saying, like, okay, so BYU's going to lose today. So what does that mean for BYU to get into the Big 12 game, the Big 12 championship game? Like, they were already there. And then to BYU's credit.
That crowd was wrong like 3 or 4 times earlier this year too, by the way.
Were
they
BYU's
right the last two games? They were, unfortunately.
Yeah. The Cougars show up in the second half. There's some impassioned speech at halftime. Players rally. And they come out and they start making some plays. And then BYU builds some momentum.
Yeah.
They scored that first touchdown, gave up a long touchdown pass, which were Arizona State's only points. But again, BYU didn't waver. They kept coming. They kept making plays. And they had a legitimate shot to win this game again.
The throw to JoJo Phillips, unfortunately, is not there. Otherwise, that's your game winner in this. BYU had a possession to win the game. They had a Hail Mary opportunity. As well, but yeah, ultimately disappointing, man. Okay, let's dive into what a lot of people are talking about, which is the end of the game. The fans storm the field. You're there. You're in the midst of this. Shades of 2014 Miami Beach Bowl minus the fighting, but the recklessness was crazy. And BYU came up just short on the Hail Mary. What did you make of all that?
I called it a dumpster fire because I thought it was. When the fans storm the field and there's still 1 second left on the clock, they didn't go back up in the stands.
No.
They're just on the sidelines. So there are thousands of people.
Amidst the BYU players.
There are thousands of people still on the sidelines. This is before that. We're watching Sam Levitt.
This whole sequence is absolutely.
Which is probably intentional grounding.
That's what Kalani Sitake said it was after, by the way.
Which should have given BYU the ball at the spot, but it didn't.
Would have been at the 41. The rule is a little murky as to whether on a switch of possession you get that spot.
Kenny
there.
Dillingham's losing his absolute mind. Why is there not back on the clock?
Why is there not space with the ref? Like, how do they allow? Like, Arizona State event staff did nothing to help this situation. The BYU players, the officials.
The explanation I got was...
What in the world was that?
The explanation I got, because I asked some staffers, yeah. I'm like, hey, what's the protocol there typically, just so I know? And they're like, well, what do you want us to do? It's a bunch of excited kids. That was the explanation I got.
Why are you here then?
What do you want us to do? Try and protect both teams. I'm not talking about just BYU players. Like, it can get super weird. Super weird. And it did.
The Arizona State players don't need protection from their own fans. That's silly.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if they're so excited and players are getting pushed over, there's a chance that both teams could have some guys that get injured if you get trampled down and whatever. Like, I know they're big, big, strong guys for the most part.
Once the field storm happens, yes, but before then, you got to get out of the way. You can't be in the box. There's a guy in the medical tent. There was a video that came out. Like, what are we doing?
Well, and then in our day and age, Everybody has their phone out, and I was so proud.
Homo went and got Chase Roberts.
Loved that Tom did that. I was so proud of BYU's players and administration and staff to keep their cool in a situation where you see the fans, they're all coming up. The majority of the fans are coming over to BYU with their phones out to record and mock the players. My initial thought was someone is going to lose their temper and someone's probably going to get punched in the face.
I'm surprised no one did.
And nobody did. So super, super
and there's no
good move by BYU.
Field storm or kid in the medical tent or people on top of Chase if you don't go down 21-0. That's my biggest issue is not field storm and the lack of how, it was chaotic and it wasn't handled well. It's that you went down 21-0. There's no field storm or craziness if you don't play, if you play better in the first half. That's my biggest issue with the game.
Even then.
I am upset and bothered by a lot of things that happen. One, within the control of BYU. Two, within the control of the event staff or whatever. I'm not angry at fans for storming the field. I am angry that they get to just interact with the players during the
game.
That's
weird.
Like, I am upset that people just, beer spills on all your backpack and stuff after the game. Like, what are you, Max Hall's family at Utah the year before?
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't intentional. It wasn't intentional, but a bunch of fans with their libations or jumping over the stands and like,
good use of libations.
I'm watching my backpack just get drenched with said libations going, oh, that's going to be fun explanation. Why does your backpack smell so bad, Spencer?
What if it was the 0% alcohol? Oh, yes. Yeah. So that was crazy.
You're right. It shouldn't have come down to that play.
Yeah.
And Kalani Sitake said as much. Listen to this.
The crew did a great job at communicating with me what they're seeing and what was being told to them. And we knew we had 1 second left. I didn't know if there was going to be unsportsmanlike conduct or not, but there wasn't. So all we knew is we have a slight chance at a Hail Mary play. And we did it, and we were just a couple yards short.
And he added, it shouldn't have come down to that play.
Right.
It should not have come down to one play. We had plenty of opportunities to make it not so.
Jake was pressured a little too much for that moment, and he's obviously got to get the ball in the end zone. Because Chase catches that ball.
And Chase felt like
he was still going and up. It's like, no,
he said he wasn't on the ground.
He was down.
Just an absolutely crazy scene there,
for
sure. All right. Now we turn our attention to the question that everybody was, if not asking at halftime.
What are the tiebreakers?
When some of the fan base had given up. But when the game was actually final, Spencer, how does BYU play in Dallas again? No one wanted to hear it last week. No one wanted to hear about the insurance policy last week. Then everybody wanted to hear about it.
Yeah, I didn't want to hear it either. Let's just win the game.
Cougars still have a legitimate good shot to play in Dallas and maybe get a rematch with Arizona State. We'll get into the specifics of how that happens in just a second. Listen to this from Chase Roberts when asked about the idea.
This was incredible.
Taking on Arizona State for a second time and getting to the Big 12 title game.
We're going to come back. We're going to smoke Houston. I hope we see Arizona State in the Big 12 championship because we're going to absolutely demolish them. They didn't want to play us that second half. They didn't feel they were a team that could beat us. Unfortunately, we started slow, and that's what got us this game. But we just roll into this next game. Hopefully, we play them in the Big 12 championship. We start off fast. We beat this team by 3-4 scores.
Okay, Chase.
Whoa.
Okay.
We're going to smoke Houston. We're going to demolish Arizona State. Very emotional.
And he's the guy that has people like crawling all over him at the end.
Phones in hand.
To mock him. And like, so you know he's feeling like high emotions after the game.
Those are the strongest words I've heard from a BYU player postgame since Max Hall against Utah. Like, whoa. So I hope he's right. What BYU needs is for Arizona to beat Arizona State or Kansas State to beat Iowa State. So
just one of the two, and BYU beats Houston.
At 1:30, we have the Territorial Cup in Arizona. At 5:30, I'm talking local mountain time, we have Iowa State, Kansas State.
Go Wildcats times two.
Yes, exactly. And at 8:15, we have BYU taking on Houston. BYU needs to win, of course,
yes,
as well. But there could be an 8-way tie in the Big 12, by the way.
It's not going to happen, but there could be.
But it could. And there is an opportunity for BYU still to get in, and obviously we're going to know in like the second quarter whether the Houston game means Big 12 title or not.
BYU, once again, obviously needs to beat Houston. But then if one of the two teams, Arizona State or Iowa State lose their game, then BYU is in. Depending on how those games go, will determine who BYU's opponent is. Now, if Arizona State loses to Arizona and Iowa State beats Kansas State, then BYU's going to play Iowa State in the Big 12 championship game. Yep. Now, if Arizona State beats Arizona and Iowa State loses to Kansas State, then BYU's going to play Arizona State.
The rematch, the chase, Roberts. And I think all of you.
Many of you want. Yeah, most.
We want it, right? I want it.
I would love it. I would love it. If both of those
teams
lose.
And I want the Arizona State event staff to be there. Just kidding.
If both of those teams, now because they can't record halftime speeches, if both of those teams lose, meaning if Arizona State and Iowa State both lose, then BYU will play Colorado in the Big 12 championship game. Lots of scenarios.
Crazy.
Just beat Houston.
Yep.
Beat Houston.
Season finale of Coordinators Corner coming up later today, 2 Eastern time on the BYU TV app. All three coordinators in the house. As Greg Rebell discusses the Arizona State game, and let's head to Houston.
After the break, let's celebrate the first of two national championships.
Yeah!
BYU's women's cross-country team, Lexi Halliday-Lowry, Riley Chamberlain, Carmen Alder, and Taylor Owatinski, all in studio next. This is BYU Sports Station. Who's number one?
Brigham.
They're number one.
But you know who the morning belongs to? Because, to quote Jim Harbaugh, the team, the team, the team. BYU is the team.
We are live at Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Jerem Jordan. John Anderson saying the morning belonged to BYU women's cross-country. Well, the morning here on Monday still belongs to
the
cross-country teams, right? And they're up first. Joining us now in studio are Lexi Halliday-Lowry, Riley Chamberlain, Carmen Alder, and Taylor Roatinsky from your national champion.
Yeah, national champion. Let's
BYU women's cross-country. Amazing. Amazing. They brought the trophy in.
Oh, man.
This quartet of awesome. We're so grateful to have you with us in Studio B.
We even have like a unique seating arrangement. We wanted four of you in here. So thanks for being here. This is awesome.
All right. First question is for you, Lexi, because you are in many ways the perceived leader of this team and you felt that. You took it on your shoulders. You told us that in studio, like I need to lead out and get this team to something potentially special. So to see it come to fruition, how would you sum up your emotions the moment you heard, we did it, we are national champions?
I don't know if there's words that could describe that feeling, because we crossed the line and it's just chaos. There's hundreds of women coming in, there's carnage, people are lying down. I'm just trying to find my women. And I remember I'd crossed, I saw these three, and I remember looking back and being like, we need a five!
Yeah.
Like, where's
yeah.
our five? And I saw Carly come in, and then we gathered everyone up, and I remember like frantically looking around, like, I'm like, did we do it? And I saw my dad on the side, and he was like, and I was like, no, like, where's coach? Like, I need coach to tell us we won. And I saw Cindy, one of our other women, she's like, you won? I was like, no, like, I need Coach Taylor. And we kind of started to celebrate, and we saw Coach Taylor and she like put up the number one, and I think Rye saw her first, because then there's a photo of her and she was standing up there like this, like sending it back. And I remember I turned and I saw her, and I just immediately started just to cry, because there was so much. The race itself was the easy part. Like, getting to the line, that was hard. Mm. And so once we got to the line, knowing that we had gone through so much for each other, we just got to run for each other. And that's why there was so much emotion. That's why there were tears. That's why there were so much. That's why we had the celebration that we had.
That's amazing. Carmen, how would you summarize the experience?
No, yeah, I remember just, like, looking at Lexi, and we were all kind of like, did we do it? Like, because people were saying, like, oh, like, you did it, but, like, we didn't see Coach Taylor, so we're all like, we can't celebrate, and then they're like, never mind. So we're all just kind of, like, holding each other, like, just tend to be like, did we? And then, like, yeah. Once, like, it was confirmed, then we were like, oh, it was such, like, a relief.
Riley, your face in one of the photos was the anticipation of, like, did we? What was that moment like for you?
It was so surreal. Like, I don't know, everything had just been building up to that moment, and then to, like, actually, like, have done it. It was just so cool. We were just so happy, and I just like was overwhelmed with like love and gratitude for the people around me.
Taylor, what was it like to celebrate not with your teammates, but with everybody that was there in the support staff of BYU when it was finalized?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I think all of us can agree. You could hear BYU the entire race. Like, we had a lot of fans there, and it was really cool to be able to hear that just throughout while you're running. But it was cool because you don't just feel like it's just your team, like you have a big support all around you. And might not have noticed, but I'm not in a lot of the celebration pictures. I was on all fours. I was throwing up. So there's like one little video that like pans over everyone celebrating, and then like in the corner you can see me just on all hands and knees. I know, like I actually didn't know we won for probably like a minute or two more. Riley, like they
I
were
was,
all
like,
jumping.
Trying to grab
yeah,
her.
She like kind of like put her hands on me. And I look up and she kind of saw the mess and was like, and just turned away. And then I like got up and, but like they all said, it's like, you're just overwhelmed with all the gratitude. And then it's like, we all celebrate with each other and we look over and we're like, oh, we want to go like, celebrate with the trainers, like the, you know, everyone. It's just, it's a group effort.
Listen, you left it in Madison. You know what? I got a
fist
bump there.
Let's go. That's
what's up.
Literally left it all in
Madison.
And that's part of what you guys talked about, which is embrace the imperfect. Even when you finish and win the national championship, you're ralphing on the side. But that was part of what you guys talked about is this was an imperfect season, but you're number one at the end with this trophy.
Yeah, and even just comparing to last year, we had a perfect build-up last year. Like, we all got to the line, I'd say pretty much having perfect builds, but it was the most imperfect outcome, where this season, I don't know why, we decided at the beginning of the season where not a lot had happened yet compared to like what would come. And we, coach had just decided like, no, we are embracing the imperfect. And we had the most imperfect build to have the most perfect outcome. Mm-hmm.
All right, Carmen, back to you. The conditions, and we'll have a few of you address this, but I'm gathering based on previous conversations leading up to the race, you felt like this was a significant advantage for BYU, both the men and the women, if it was cold and potentially snowy, like you felt like you had an advantage there. Why?
Well, I know for our regionals race, like we got there, it had snowed. And we were like, all right, well, we're just gonna run the snow. And we had like olive oil. And I don't know, we were ready. Like when we got to like the course and like it had snowed, we're like, this is just like regionals. We've done this before. We've experienced it. It was just another.
Did you rub olive oil on your arms or something? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It keeps you warm.
Yeah. Football players sometimes do Vaseline. Like,
that'll do it.
It's still like cover the pores, I assume, right?
Yeah. Riley, you like this? You like those conditions?
Yeah, I do. I'm from California, so like I wouldn't think that I'd like them that much, but like we train in it every day, and I'm like, if it's like, other teams, we were like watching them run on the treadmills at the hotels we were staying at. And we're getting out there and we're doing our easy run outside. We're gonna acclimate and we're gonna embrace these conditions because, they can be used to our advantage.
We're doing our easy run outside.
Yeah. Right. Quote unquote easy. Taylor, not everybody is like BYU where they celebrate a national championship by doing a fireside.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you guys?
I feel like it's a really cool opportunity for us to kind of just realize the center and what we're doing this all for and just like be super grateful and kind of bring it just back to like Heavenly Father. And it kind of just made us all, like I said, it just makes us realize the purpose of why we're doing all this. And it's just, I think, a special way, like you're not gonna see us out partying or like, you know what I mean? But we all just get to spend time together and just center ourselves.
Were you doing it no matter what?
Doing what?
The fireside.
Yeah.
Is that happening?
Yeah. Yes.
It didn't matter whether you took
17th,
right?
Okay,
you were doing it no matter what,
of
course.
Planned.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now you're like this in this euphoric feeling. You just won the national championship. And then seemingly minutes later, you're watching the men's team start their adventure. So what were the emotions of that like as you're super excited, you're pulling for the men, and then you watch them do that. What was that like, Lexi?
That was also very surreal. We were like trying to start our cool down and we were watching the men, and to watch them get such a big lead at the beginning of the race and just to like hold on with all their might until they all crossed the line, that was super, super cool too. And just to realize that like, that hasn't happened in 20 years. And to have both teams show up on the same day, coming in ranked number one, like that's hard too, to have both of us show up, having that pressure coming in.
The target.
The target, it was a target. Yep. And to have both of us do it, and I don't know, more the merrier. Like when we got back last night, so many people showed up for both for both teams, and I think that's why it's it was really, really, really cool, and to be able to experience that with them as well.
Riley, tell us about last night. You guys get to the Smithfield House, and that's the BYU version of partying, right? Ryan Waite's crowd surfing.
It was so much fun, just like seeing our teammates, our friends, everybody that's invested so much time and like emotion and support into us, like just being able to celebrate with them as well. It was just so cool, and I just like Cougar Nation's the best nation.
What are you wearing?
What is that?
This is like a pajama party?
Christmas PJs.
Yeah. Nice. Coach actually had us, she gave us these Christmas pajamas. We were all matching for our kind of like pre-race meeting a few nights before the race. And she kind of did it differently this year, where she just wanted us to feel like little kids on Christmas. Like, this is super fun. It's exciting. We get to do this. And it kind of made it like more lighthearted. Some of that big pressure that had been on us was like alleviated, and she had been doing that all season, just little things like that to make it feel just more fun, and like we're just so grateful we get to do this. So we all like deleted social media for the past like month, so it's like we were like ranked number one, but we like didn't really like know everything everyone was saying about us or all that, so it's like we actually never said out loud like we are going for the win. No one ever talked about it, but we all in the back of our head kind of were like we know we have a good team, we have the pieces, like it's just whether or not it comes together on the day. You know what I mean?
You weren't healthy, relatively speaking, as a team
all
year. Like, wild to do this, going through so many injuries and just so many ups and downs it's remarkable, to say the least. I'm probably underselling it. But congratulations to all of you. Enjoy your Christmas pajamas. Are you doing Christmas morning at Coach Taylor's house? The actual Christmas morning? Hey, Coach, what'd you get for us?
Riley's like, I'm going to California. Get me out of here. All right.
Congratulations to all of you.
Thank you so much.
Check out After Further Review tomorrow night, 7 Eastern. I wish the guys just broke down their race. That'd be fun, too.
Right?
But Arizona State looking ahead to Houston. Obviously, a huge week for football.
Let's keep this national championship theme rolling, huh? The men's team on their way to Studio B next. Lucas Bonds, Creed Thompson, Davin Thompson, and head coach Ed Eystone. Join us after the break. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
It's a privilege to be ranked number one going in. Have gratitude in our hearts today for all the people that helped us get here.
Double win!
Hey,
we'll take it!
Tell them, for the build, the second national championship team from BYU men's cross country is in Studio B. Welcome back to Studio. I am Spencer. He is Jerem. And yes, joining us now are Lucas Bonds, Creed Thompson, Davin Thompson, and the head coach Ed Eystone.
The national champions
national
are in
champions.
The house. Let's go, baby.
You did it again, Coach. Unbelievable. You had the target on your back. It felt like you were the underdog much of the season, and then you climbed the mountain at the end. So what was it like to be number one and finish number one after the weekend?
Well, probably in one word, relief. We were feeling some pressure, but we also had faith and trust in the build. These guys have been working hard for a long, long time. Many seniors on the team. So it wasn't just a one-year build. It was a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year build with missions and whatnot. So super happy, super pleased at just the poise that our man demonstrated, and particularly with the way that we took that race by the scruff of the neck and we said, this is ours, baby. If you want it, come take it from us. And it's not easy when you go out super hard to get a big lead. Then you got to fight for the lead. Hold on to the lead. And they held on very, very well.
That was a fun watch because it was like, hold on, baby, because we're in first. Let's
go. You're literally posting that on X. Like, come on, guys.
I said, come on, boys.
Hold on.
Yeah. So what was it like in the middle of the race? You're getting cues from coaches of what the lead is and whatnot of, obviously, it's like run as fast as you can, but there's strategy to this, and you guys held on, Lucas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, initially our strategy had been not to be in first place for the first 4K. We were supposed to be kind of packed up in the 20s and 30s place and as a team be maybe second or third. But just within that first 1 or 2K, we immediately saw we were all up there.
Now, Casey's like, follow me.
Yeah, no, seriously. Go. It was the first time Casey had ever had somebody to race with the whole season from his team. And it was super fun. Like, at one point, I think I was second place in the race. It's like, this isn't, I don't belong here. But it was fun. I mean, the whole time we knew we were in first. Coach had a whiteboard that was telling us, like, how far ahead we were. And so we had that confidence, and we could see our guys. We were in white jerseys, and so it was easy to spot. And we knew we were in a good place, and that we had enough consistent guys that we could hold on for the win.
This is a question for Creed and Davin. And Davin, you told us you wanted those terrible conditions. You wanted snow. You wanted it to be miserable. You felt like that was where you would be your best. So what was it like when you actually got to the conditions and you were running in them and got out to that big lead?
Yeah, so Thursday before the race, 2 days out, we go to the course preview, and it was just like a blizzard. It's like dumping snow.
Fun videos and pictures, like, of you guys.
Yeah,
out there,
like, yeah. Sick pictures.
You guys out there just getting some light work in.
Yeah, it was crazy though. I was like, this is perfect. Like, it's all coming together, you know? And we were all talking the whole run, like, bro, if the race was today, like, that'd be so sick. And then it got warmer the next couple days, and it was still cold, but it wasn't like terrible conditions. But we had performed well against Oklahoma State in Texas in the heat. And we're like, okay, like, we can win in any conditions, but we did prefer the bad conditions, but we're like, we can still win in any conditions, so.
Creed, first time in Studio B, welcome.
Yes,
good to have
you,
man. National championship.
Rocking that All-American medal,
too. Let's go.
I love it.
Yep. When did you realize, hey, we did it, we won the race?
I only saw the whiteboard that had how much we were ahead by. I only saw that with 1K to go, and I was hurting. I was going backwards a little bit. I saw Casey ahead, and he was storming for the win, but I was in the pain cave, and I saw that we had a 30-point lead. I was like, I'm hurting, but I think that's a good enough lead. I think we have it. And then I crossed the line, gave Casey a hug, and we turned around and watched everyone come in. And then I think after Davin came in, Casey raised his arms, and we knew we had it. And
wow.
It was awesome.
The pain cave. It sounds like a terrible place.
It is. It is very painful.
Until you win, and then it's wonderful.
Yep.
And I love the quote from Connor Mance a couple years ago. Someone said, what's your biggest advantage? He said, I can take the pain longer. Mm-hmm. I can suffer longer, I think is what he said. Yeah.
Coach, put into perspective a 13-point win. Because people are like, okay, well, is that a big win? Is it a close win? So how does that translate in cross-country terms?
Well, considering we were in the 124 range, 124 points, so 13, a percentage of that is, what is that? Is that 10%? Yeah, so, you know, take a foot by it. It's like winning by probably a field goal. Yeah, winning by a field goal.
It's close.
So we had a 28-point, in football terms again, it was like we had a 4-touchdown lead, and then over the last half, it got whittled away. But we held on. Our defense rose up.
Cross-country defense is so good.
The pain cave defense.
This guy's our defense right here. This guy's our defense.
Lucas, tell us about watching the women win and sort of what that gave you guys going into yours.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of odd in cross-country because you'd think that we'd be there cheering the women on and then having our own event later, but really we were on our warm-up run like 30 minutes out from our race while they were racing, and so we saw their start, and then we saw them in the last 400 meters, and so we were cheering them on the last 400. We could tell they were doing well, and then I think sometime after our warm-up somebody said they won, and so it was super hype. But it puts a lot of pressure on when they get it done, and they came in ranked number one, they got it done, and we're ranked number one, and now we have to race a 10K and do the same thing. And so it put a lot of pressure on, but it was confidence building for sure. I mean, we're good friends with them, and it was super, super fun to see.
All right, back to the Thompson twins. Okay,
and go watch their Deep Blue, by the way.
Yes,
on the BYU TV app. Really good.
Yes, also great music, but unrelated. Okay. That's a bad joke. Ed Lasso, because you're a child of the 80s. You're a man of the 80s, right?
We're too young.
Okay. What have the last 48 hours been like for you, celebrating with fans?
Fireside.
Even the fireside and everything that went into that. Well, Creed, we'll have you answer first.
Not enough sleep. even when we're in bed, we're thinking. There's lots of thoughts. I remember when I woke up the day after we won, I was roommates with Joey, and he was like, you ready to race? I was like, that wasn't a dream, bro. That was real. And yeah, it feels surreal that it actually happened and that it all came together and that we did it. It's so awesome.
Davin, what about for you?
Yeah, for me, I kind of had a cool experience. It was like super cool in the moment, like super hype. There's so much media around us. It's just kind of crazy, hard to like digest. And then yesterday we're on the plane, we're flying from Madison to Minneapolis. And I'm sitting next to Cindy, our director of ops, and Stosh, our athletic trainer. And I like pull out my journal. I'm like writing about the race. And after like maybe 20 minutes, I like look up and Cindy's asleep and Stosh is asleep. And then I look around and it felt like the whole plane was just like dead asleep. And I was just like, and then I just started like crying. Like I was just like, this is like so special. Like you see the seven guys on the course, that, like the world sees the seven guys, they see the trophy, but like what we see is like all the people that got us here, like so much support, our families, our staff, and like our whole team. Like there's so many unsung heroes that got this title for us, and they deserve all the attention and all the praise, and it was just so special and gratifying.
Well said, well said. That's like this spiritual moment. Then you get off the bus, and it's Smith Fieldhouse, Ed, and it's a party, man.
A different kind of spirit.
Well, yeah, we had, I don't know how many hundreds of people we had there, but at least a couple hundred of our loyal fans, some teammates, some obviously family and friends, and then just people from the community that I'd never met before, and it was great, and it, again, just shows the number of fans we have, a number of people that are enjoying and thrilling vicariously through the amazing race that both teams had, and we were, you know, very moved and touched by that as well. It was really cool.
Love the images.
Maybe one of my favorite moments of the weekend, and I think this is appropriate given that it's Thanksgiving on Thursday, right? Is as we were leaving the course, the team came together and just said, hey, let's make sure that we express some gratitude. We had a wonderful, you know, team prayer just together to give thanks for what a thing. So many things that could have gone wrong did not go wrong, and so many things that we needed to go right went right. And even in our case of an imperfect race on our part, we were able to put it together, pull it through, and this certainly be, as we're gathered around Thanksgiving table, one of the things that we'll all be very, very grateful about is the team, the build, and the fact that we were able to put it together when it counted the most.
We are grateful for all of you, what you do for the university, how you represent the athletic department, and we're grateful for cross-country defense.
Oh, the defense by Lucas is awesome. Thanks for coming in, guys. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
Shout out Casey Klinger, who goes out on top.
Yes.
His cross-country career.
Okay.
What a career. BYU football with Kalani Sitake coming up tomorrow night, 8:30 Eastern on the BYU TV app. Big game with Houston and some scoreboard watching this week for the Cougars.
And it's a Monday, so you know what that means for BYU football fans. Trevor Maddich on another Maddich Monday on what went wrong for the Cougars on Saturday and why he believes they're still very much in the Big 12 title hunt. This is BYU Sports Nation.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda, but didn't. If Iowa State loses next week against Kansas State, then BYU is in. Assuming they have to beat Houston, obviously.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B. You know the scenario. BYU needs to beat Houston, and then one of two things need to happen. Either Arizona beats Arizona State or Kansas State beats Iowa State. Joining us now to discuss all of that and his take on what in the world happened in Tempe on Saturday as ESPN college football analyst and insider. He is a national champion of college football. Trevor Maddich is back for another Maddich Monday. Trevor, always great to talk with you. As you assess what happened to BYU over the weekend, how are you feeling about the Cougars' chances to still get to Dallas and a Big 12 championship game?
It's still on the table. They have to beat Houston, of course, but there's still scenarios that they could do it. You talked about Arizona State, Iowa State are the teams that they need to lose. And the one that's most likely to have difficulty, according to ESPN's FBI Football Power Index, is Iowa State. They have only a 57.8 or so chance of beating Kansas State. And so that's the best chance for BYU. Arizona State is a big favorite over Arizona, but it's a tricky matchup for Arizona State because of the rivalry and because the strength of Arizona's offense is their receiver, Tetaroa McMillan. He's 6'5", over 200 pounds. He's got Noah Fifita throwing to him. Noah Fifita's almost got 3,000 passing yards this year. And that is the, if you're going to have a soft spot, if you're going to say there's a soft spot for Arizona State, it's going to be their passing defense. And so it's a tricky matchup. So, you know, it's BYU no longer controls their destiny, but it's still possible.
What was the biggest issue you saw Saturday between BYU and Arizona State?
Well, there were two. The first one is that somebody didn't set the alarm clock for the team, and they didn't show up until the second half. That's a problem. They got outscored 21-3 in the first half. They outscored Arizona State 20-7 in the second half. And part of that was because of the running game of Arizona State. Cam Scataboo was terrific in this game, and he just sort of ground out long drives. They were 50%. Arizona State was on third and fourth down, and so BYU couldn't get him off the field. That was part of it. But part of it also was that in the first half, BYU was not able to capitalize on that soft spot I was talking about, which is the pass defense, the secondary. I'm not saying that they're bad. I'm saying that's where you want to attack when you play the Sun Devils. And in the first half, they didn't. They were trying to play complementary football and keep the running game going and keep the BYU defense off the field so they don't get pounded too much by Scataboo and the Arizona State rushing attack. But they weren't moving the ball and they weren't scoring. In the second half, they started throwing the ball more. You know, they had three consecutive touchdown drives in the second half. In the first one, it was 12 plays. Only three of them went to the running back. The rest were either passes or runs that featured quarterback and wide receivers. The second one was a four-play touchdown drive, all passes. The third one, nine plays, only one running back run. The rest, once again, it was all to wide receivers one way or the other, and it was all about quarterback and smaller guys. And they started to attack in the way that I thought they should have the whole game. And they ripped off three straight touchdowns. And so that got going in the second half, but it got going a beat too late for them to pull it off.
Trevor, momentum is an interesting beast. And when BYU opted to go for it on their opening drive from near midfield on fourth, and I believe it was about 5 yards, and didn't get it, you could feel in the stadium just the swing of understandable momentum because Arizona State's defense has come up with a big stop. They've got a short field, and they go down and score a touchdown. And it kind of felt like a snowball effect a little bit for BYU. So as you assess those early game scenarios, is there anything you would have changed there? Because I know a lot of BYU's fan base is saying, hey, when it's a good team versus a good team and you have a chance to flip the field early, just punt. How do you see that scenario and momentum that comes from after that?
Well, I don't mind that call because BYU is one of the best teams in the country at converting fourth downs. And they're playing a team that wants to pound your defense into oblivion. And they had a chance there to extend that drive, go down, maybe get some points, and keep their defense off the field. Now you're talking about the first drive, but at the same time, you're eating up clock instead of Arizona State eating up clock. And so it didn't pay off. But if it had paid off, that's exactly what people would be saying. They would be saying, look, great move. You're on the road. You're great on fourth down. And you don't want to expose your defense any more than you have to that rushing attack. And so it didn't work out. But the quality of the decision is not defined by whether or not it worked. In the event, it's whether or not with all the information that you had when you made the decision, is it defensible? And I think it was.
What issues are you seeing for BYU offensively? Because they certainly woke up in the second half, but we haven't seen that same BYU team that was for the majority of the first part of Big 12 play, scoring between 34 and 41 points a game.
Well, it's a matter of making plays that are there. You know, you need to take what's available. And you need to also remember that you need to fight the fight you're in, not the fight you wish you were in. BYU had showed the ability to win high-scoring games, close games, look at SMU, and they were able to do it both ways. But they were able to do it both ways because they were able to make the plays they had to make at the time they had to make them. I mean, go back to the Oklahoma State game. BYU was trailing, needed a touchdown, and with you know, about 15 seconds to go, they find themselves on the 35-yard line. And what do they do? 35-yard touchdown pass to win it in the closing seconds against Utah. BYU is trailing. They need a field goal to win. With about a minute to go, a little over a minute, they found themselves at second and 10 on their own 19-yard line. Three plays later, they're in field goal range. And they end up kicking the winning field goal, making the plays that need to be made. But the Kansas game, I don't mind that it was low scoring. It was that the plays weren't made that needed to be made. And as you look back at it, you look at the last drive of the first half against Kansas, where they had a first and goal about the 9-yard line. about 40 seconds to go, two timeouts. They throw a fade to the right sideline. The ball was thrown inside and short, and so it was intercepted on first down. Had they kicked that field goal, then it looked like at the end you add those 3 points to it instead of going for a touchdown, which they needed to beat Kansas. They could have kicked a field goal to beat Kansas, right? And so once again, things that happened in the first half don't always translate to what it was in the second half because of the way everything affects everything else, the butterfly effect. But you can make that case. You can also make the case that when the quick kick on fourth down by the Kansas quarterback hit the BYU defender in the helmet and bounced back out, they had a clean chance to recover it. They didn't. Kansas ended up recovering it on the 3-yard line, scored a touchdown. Kansas wasn't able to move the ball in that game. That terrific offense, BYU controlled the Kansas offense. These are plays that were there to be made. BYU did not make them, and they lost the game to Kansas. Then you look at this one to Arizona State. Talk all you want about the first half. Arizona State came out in the first half. They dominated it. But BYU dominated the second half. And the play that needed to be made was with about a minute and a half to go. JoJo Phillips was running open down the left sideline.
Yes.
Hit him, and it's probably the go-ahead touchdown.
Yeah.
Missed him, though. And so the next play was the interception that almost iced the game. BYU still had that Hail Mary that they threw. But the next play was an interception. But hit JoJo there, and BYU probably wins that game. Now, I'm not saying it's the quarterback's fault, and let me be very clear about this, that I just mentioned two interceptions by Jake Retzlaff. Had it not been for the way Jake Retzlaff plays, BYU would never have made those miracle comebacks, would never have been in the position that they're in now with 9 wins and a chance to win 10 in the regular season. With that comes, from time to time, an errant throw. But for the most part, Jake has been outstanding. It's just that when the opportunities have been there, on offense and on defense, in critical moments, they have not made those plays in the 2-game losing streak.
Trevor, now we need to address the end of game or close to the end of game chaos, because it was a wild scene where BYU has a chance with 1 second after they had to clear the whole field because it's been stormed. Everybody thought the game was over, but it wasn't. How would you assess how you perceived that entire situation play out?
As it was unfolding, I thought if BYU pulls this off and completes this Hail Mary for a touchdown to win this game, it will go down in history with the 1980 Miracle Bowl against SMU, where Clay Brown caught that Hail Mary from Jim McMahon. And, you know, the way the thing it went, it was Arizona State trying to run out the clock. They had, 7-8 seconds to go. They decided to drop the quarterback back, let him run around a little bit, and then throw the ball high up in the air, and by the time the ball came down, the game would be over. Well, the clock did strike zero, but the officials decided there was 1 second left when the ball hit the ground. Well, the fans didn't know that, so they stormed the field. And then it took a little bit of time to get the fans back up into the stands, and BYU had a chance to throw that last attempt, and it got down to the 3-yard line. Now, I thought that was interesting because I thought it was intentional grounding by Sam Levitt. I mean, he dropped way back, but when he threw it, it was clear he was just throwing it away. And if they had called intentional grounding, the BYU would have had the ball at the spot of the foul. Instead, they had the ball back around midfield, and Jake was under pressure when he threw it, and it went down to the 3-yard line instead of into the end zone. I'm not saying that cost them the game. I'm saying that it would have been an interesting change if that would have been called. Either way, the fans then stormed the field a second time. That was a completely nuts situation. And the way BYU handled it afterwards, I thought, was perfect. Because you could say it should have been intentional grounding. You could say it should have been unsportsmanlike conduct called on the fans for storming the field early. None of those two penalties were called. But BYU didn't point at that. They said that that didn't cost them the game. They took the high road all the way. And I thought that was the exact right thing to do. But as it was unfolding, I was thinking BYU has already had some miracle finishes this year. If they have a miracle finish here, it will go down in history.
Trevor, great stuff. We appreciate the time as always. Be well, and hopefully we're talking about BYU going to Dallas a week from today.
All right, guys, thanks.
Trevor Maddish of ESPN, and justice for Chase Roberts. Give him the credit for the catch.
They haven't yet. They're not going to.
We'll put a bow on this Monday show with a recap of our Big 12 Pick'em segment and a shout-out to a third national championship won by BYU over the weekend. Now, that's a trifecta. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back with our question of the day. How are you feeling about BYU football's chances to make the Big 12 title game in Dallas? Our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX, Healthcare Elevated, comes in from at TysonPeter84653, who uses the gif of the kid from Angels in the Outfield. Hey, it could happen.
It could happen.
Today's Rise of Shout-Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Men's soccer also won the club national championship. Congratulations to fifth straight for the Cougars.
Thanks to all nine of our guests today, the national championship teams. Conversation continues 24/7 on social media. For Jeremy, I'm Spencer. Go Cougs! We're number one!